The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell, joined as always by Sam Robson. Sam, I know the listeners will be dying to know how all your various DIY projects have been going. You must have been flat out in the past week.
Pretty much. The TV stand is looking okay. It hasn't fallen apart yet. And then I had a delay on delivery on my drawers and wardrobe, so I've got to wait on those for a little while, which is probably for the best, because I don't think they're going to turn out very well.
Okay. Tremendous stuff. Now, Sam, let's welcome in our guest. Last week, it was Anchor from Almori. This week, our atmosphere might be provided by some husky pups. I don't know. Coming to us live from the frozen tundra of rural Hokkaido, it's a huge hisashiburi to Cesare Polenghi. Cesare, welcome back to the podcast.
Oh, thanks. A pleasure and a privilege. Anyway, Sam, just by the way, I'm building an 140 meters wooden fence around my property. So, you know, like, but we should get together sometimes and do some DIY together.
And you really don't want my help. It'll all go horrendously wrong.
I started as a complete beginner 1 year ago. And, you know, it's just in my limited experience, it's just a matter of just like, you know, focusing, get it done one step at a time. You know, in 1 year, I'm a decent carpenter.
My experience is I put a bed together in about 7 hours, which I think was a record for anyone. So.
All right. Okay.
All right. Well, it's absolutely brilliant to have you back on the podcast, Cesare. And I don't want to put you on the spot 30 seconds into your J-Talk return, but would you care to have a guess when your last appearance was?
Like some couple of years ago, maybe?
Yeah, just about. Yeah, I had to trawl through the archives. So you were on with the anchor master himself, Mr. McIntyre, after Japan's heartbreaking loss to Belgium in the 2018 World Cup. So that was early.
Right, yeah, I remember.
Early July 2018, so about 21 months ago. So I don't know where you haven't come back because you were so disgusted that Akira Nishino kept faith in Eiji Kawashima for so long, or if you want to blame it on your dodgy DAZN connection up in Hokkaido, but whatever it has been, it's been a long time between drinks, but it's terrific to have you back on.
Thank you. A pleasure and a privilege, as always.
So you were always one of our most popular guests, Cesare. So I'm sure there's a lot of listeners, obviously most of them probably follow you on Twitter, so they probably have a decent idea of what you've been up to. But for those who don't, in a nutshell, what have the last 21 months been like for you? You've made a huge move permanently up to Hokkaido. You've started another company, or you've expanded the one you already had going, and you've been making hay, which is absolutely terrific, and you've been breeding huskies as well.
Right, that's all true. I mean, it all started with a sort of an occasional trip to Spain that out of the blue and after some 20 years violently reconnected me with European football. I was in 10 games in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, driving around the whole country, and I really fell in love with La Liga and took the chance of start working with a couple of clubs there and doing their social media and websites in Japan. I was already working as a social media manager in Japan for Juventus. And then, you know, very organically, you know, it built up from there. And in a matter of a couple of years, I had enough clients to just, you know, be completely independent. And I had, the opportunity to choose where I would live. And I've been, you know, building up over the last few years, like a sort of like a love story for Hokkaido. I always wanted to have dogs. I had dogs when I was a kid, but I never had the opportunity to have them as a grown up because I was moving and working too much. So I did buy this property up here in Higashikawa, which is exactly in the middle of Hokkaido, between Asahikawa and Furano. And you know, doing my job, but at the same time, you know, like I bought two puppies and already got my first litter. And now, yeah, I'm just sort of like, you know, turn into this, you know, country lifestyle, which surprisingly, I realized it really fit me. I cook a lot. I play music. My son is here too. He loves going to school here. So far, so good. I mean, it's been great. I mean, I was planning to travel quite a bit in these months, but, you know, of course, it wasn't possible because of the virus. But, yeah, I'm very happy of the decision I made. And, you know, everything is going well. And, you know, everybody, you know, whenever you go up for a Consadole game, you know, just take a little detour. It's a couple of hours by car. Come visit me. We get up in like a guest room with private shower, and you can play with the Huskies. There's four of them now.
And we can help you build your fence.
Yeah, but they'll probably be done by then, you know. Like, I did more than half before the winter, and now finally the snow is melting, so I'm already preparing the second part. It's just like it's a, you know, there's so many things, you know, about living in the country that I had no idea about. And just like, you know, learning them, it's just like a way of reinventing myself and, you know, discovering new things, meeting new different people. So it's been really been great. So, you know, come and see it. Come and experience it, okay?
Yep, sounds absolutely tremendous. And, yeah, absolutely fantastic stuff. And obviously great to have you on and great to hear that everything is going so well, Cesare. So, well, yeah, you talk about going up to see a Consadole Sapporo game. So, yeah, when's that going to happen? The current state of play in Japan as we record on Monday night is that... Has the state of emergency officially been declared, Cesare? I didn't actually catch the evening news tonight, though I'd heard that it was going to be, but has it actually officially been announced?
It is from the 6th, I think, for 7 prefectures, but not for Sapporo and not Nagoya as well, surprisingly. It's just like mostly Kanto, Fukuoka, and I think Hyogo and Osaka. So if I'm not wrong, sorry, the news is just like coming in so fast, but in Hokkaido, we're still going to go on with, you know, like normal life. And tomorrow the kids are going back to school. And here in the valley where we live, it's just like it's been quite normal, so it's okay. But I don't know when football can restart. And that's, of course, it's a big question for us. And, you know, it's interesting to realize, you know, besides the fact that, you know, like some of us work with it and some of us are really, you know, passionate fans, but the thing that, you know, I really feel amiss is like the everyday talking about football, you know, like the commenting, you know, like even the gossip, the transfer, the events, you know, it's so much part of my life. And now that it's not there, it's just, I really feel, you know, like, I'm missing something. And, you know, if people were to tell me, you know, like you have to go now, like, for another few months without it, I'll be okay with it. But if you tell me it's going to be like 1 year or 2 years or forever, I'll probably go mad.
Yeah, well, the school that I teach at has today announced that, yeah, the students will be, kept at home until the first weekend of May. So, obviously, yeah, things happening on a prefecture-by-prefecture basis, I guess in some respects quite similar to the United States. So, I guess if some prefectures are on lockdown in inverted commas, then that means the likelihood of the J-League starting at the currently scheduled time is basically thrown out the door. And we just have to hope that things calm down after we have seen a spike in cases in Tokyo and some other major cities as well over the last couple of weeks. Things are likely to get much worse before they get better, you would expect. So, Cesare, and I know Sam's got some ideas as well. If we work on a best case scenario, perhaps of things getting going by perhaps the middle of summer. I don't know, Cesare, what sort of a possibility do you think there is of the J League getting something resembling a full season played this year?
Well, you know, actually, I did some math. I even made a tweet about it in Japanese, and I've been discussing it with some of the other friends who follow the league. And I mean, just to keep it very simple, you know, in 1 year we got 52 weeks and we can play 2 games every week. So in 1 year, in theory, if you play nonstop, you can play 100 games, which means, to keep it very simple, in half a year you can play 50 games.
Yep.
And did some real math, like some really simple math. And I think in J1, he got 34 games plus maximum 11 in the Levan Cup and another 6 for the Emperor's Cup. All together will be 51. If you play everything, if a club plays every single game, as it happened, for example, to Cereza a couple of years ago, you will just like play 51, which fits perfectly in half a year. Now, of course, playing every 3 days for half a year, it's just like it's a bit of a massacre. But, you know, okay, two things here. Okay, well, first, you know, the J League is the only league in the world where there are rosters of 35 players. 10 of them, they never play. Maybe that's the time we'll see some of them playing. I mean, you know, like it might be harsh. There might be more injuries. But, you know, if that's the way it has to be, you know, so be it. And the second point is exactly that is the way it has to be. Because one thing that, you know, the people who are just making proposing various scenarios should not forget is that we cannot play less games than they were planned for this year. Because the sponsors and, you know, like the TV rights, the, you know, the footballer salaries, everybody who works, you know, at the club, everything is connected to the expected revenue for the year. I mean, business is a very particular business model, you know. Football is a very particular business model, meaning that, you know, like you basically spend everything that you earn because you want to be as competitive as possible. And, of course, you know, most of this money goes in player salaries. And, you know, every year, basically, you know you're going to get this money from the tickets, from the TV rights, from the, you know, the match day, from the sponsors. And then you plan to spend exactly, I mean, that money. You don't have savings, you know. It's not, it's just you spend everything you have because you are hoping to achieve something, you know, on the pitch. It could be like, you know, just to stay up, just to qualify for the ACL, or just to win a cup, just to win the title. So the clubs have already planned and de facto already spent all the money they were expecting to earn this year through those, you know, like potentially up to 51 games. Those games have to be played. I don't see a scenario where we just like say, oh, you know, like we don't play half of the season. I mean, just like, you know, I've been, you know, because of my work, I've been just like studying a lot the cases of Italy and Spain because I work for clubs in those leagues. And, you know, the situation there is just abysmal. You know, like, I mean, just Atletico Madrid, it's like ranked number 3 in the UEFA ranking for clubs. They just ask, you know, help to the government because they, you know, they cannot handle it already. So can you imagine how it's going to be for J-League clubs? So for me, it's just like it's a no-brainer. They, you know, we have to play this season, the whole season, every single game.
Yeah, I think it's. I'm sort of in agreement. I think it's going to be more difficult to start in the summer. I don't think that's really going to happen. I think we're likely to start in September or so. But I think today FIFA have said that they are willing to extend this current season like indefinitely to allow all seasons to be finished. So I think if all of Asia kind of gets on board with that and plays it out, you could start in, say, September. You might finish it March, April of next year, but I'd just play the league through that system, and then you've got the break then between the end of that league and then the Olympics, where I would put in a cup competition, say the Levain Cup. So you've still got the money coming in from that. The Scapa are still getting their money for the TV rights, so you play that at that stage, then I'd play the Olympics, and then I'd play the Emperor's Cup after that, between the Olympics and the World Cup, which is starting in the winter of 2021, so that fills that gap, and then we can get back to a normal schedule. I mean, it's so difficult to think of a correct way of doing this. It's, you don't really know what the start of the season can be. Is September still unrealistic, and we might just have to start again in February of next year? No one really knows, and I don't think there's a great answer, especially when it comes to the ACL, for example, where we're halfway through a group stage for a lot of teams, but not the Chinese teams. You've got to coordinate through so many different national FAs and whatnot to try and get this on board. So that's going to be the difficult thing in terms of how do you coordinate the kind of qualification for that tournament. But I think it's got to be creative, as I said last week, but that's the way I would do in an ideal world. So you get the fixtures in, you don't have the madness of the schedule where you're having to play every 3 days, and you can get all the cup competitions in. But again, that's quite idealistic, and in this situation, I don't think we're ever going to get ideal. So I think there are going to be people unhappy with however this plays out, but we're just going to have to go along with it.
I mean, I think that, you know, like, it's absolutely true that we don't know when we'll be able to restart. But we do have some sort of blueprint when we look at what happened in China, in Wuhan in particular, which is now back to, I mean, quote-unquote, normality. And also we know that things are getting much better already in South Korea. So I think that, you know, just, I mean, if we have to ballpark a date, the thing that we can, you know, like, July, August, that should be okay, I think. You know, it you know, like, usually, you know, like, it's just 1-2 months that are really tough. And, you know, it's maybe Japan won't even get to those levels, because is it true that some of the, you know, the social standards here, you know, like people, you know, washing their hands more, touching less, and being more respectful of rules might just help to mitigate the, in at least in part, you know, like the coming of the virus. So, I mean, I think, you know, like, probably in the summer we should be good to restart. But whatever the case, for me, what it needs to be done, you need to compress this season, the whole season, and the next season between the restart and the end of 2021. You know, that, as I said, you know, if you play every 3.5 days, okay, twice every week, okay, you can play everything in 6 months. So if you restart, say, in September, okay, that's going to drag you until February of the next year. You take, you know, literally 2-3 weeks off, and then you restart the next season and go on. Because, you know, you might say, okay, this is just so demanding. It's crazy. It's too much football. Okay, what are the alternatives? The alternatives are that a lot of clubs are going to go bankrupt. I don't think, you know, the people realize how just like, they don't realize enough how just like, you know, without the money of every single game from the zone, from, you know, the tickets, from everything, some clubs will not survive. In particular, you know, like, Japanese clubs are not rich. And, you know, like, the big companies that are behind them don't throw that much money into, you know, into the clubs. You know, I know some of, you know, how much Hitachi and Mitsubishi are putting in. It's not nowhere near, you know, like, the money that, you know, like, you know, we see, you know, spent by big sponsors in Europe. So I think that just like to play every single game that is scheduled and then get back into next season is, the, for me, at least, my opinion, and I haven't found somebody just like to you know, to give me one reason for this to be wrong. For me, that's the only way. That's the only way. And, yeah, it might be, you know, it might be complicated, very complicated when we move into European football. And you definitely have a point here, Sam. You know, I think that, you know, like, to, that's, it seems, it really sounds like a logistic nightmare to just reorganize the ACL, especially because it started already. If it wouldn't have started, you could have think of different formula or thing. Maybe they will have to just void the games that have been played and rethinking as a direct knockout, as the, you know, the ancient UEFA Champions Cup was. But they have to, you know, games need to be played, otherwise there won't be the money to hold the whole system, I think. I don't know, for example, you know, what's the situation with DAZN, but I'm thinking of the investment they've done, which is for the J League is massive. And, you know, the fact that now, you know, especially with the fact that they are, like, in many cases a monthly, you know, subscription and people can unplug immediately. And, of course, it's not only J League, it's all these other sports and stuff. I don't know how much money they'll be losing now, and I don't know if they can, you know, sustain it if just like all the games are not put back, you know, like and played in front of fans, of course.
DAZN is going to be a real worry, actually. I know, not necessarily in Japan, but I know in America especially, they have kind of overpaid for a lot of their sports, and their whole model is based on showing live sports content. So when you've paid so many millions of dollars on boxing or whatever it is, or and then the J League and all these other sports, when nothing is going on, they're in a real mess in trying to get any sort of money going into them. They, I know they've tried to kind of defer on payments to other sort of leagues or competitions around the world. I know Mr. Mirai said that didn't apply to the J-League, but who really knows what's going on there? So I think they could be in a lot of financial difficulty, which then would have another roll-on effect onto the league. So, yeah, it's...
Correct. You know, the games has to be played, you know, like, I think, you know, I've read a lot of you know, really smart alternative ideas, making different competition, cup knockout. Okay, that's all good, but, you know, the number of games played by every club should be the same, because that's what the budget have been built upon. So that's, you know, like, it's, for me, it's really a no-brainer. It cannot be different. Those games must be played. So if we roll into January, February, March, if there's basically no break between the two seasons, okay, big deal, you know. If the alternative is, for some clubs, is, you know, bankrupt. So for me, you know, it's just a matter of when do we restart, how do we stuff it in, and, you know, even for people who are just, even for the fans, it's going to be harder. It's going to be harder for the people who work on media. It's going to be harder for me, you know, like who I work on social media, you know, like, but it's okay, you know, what's the alternative, you know, like, you know, I mean, I'm not going to make a living just by breeding huskies for a few years, I think. So, you know, like, I'll go with it, you know, like, and to be honest, you know, I'll be, you know, I don't know, this is something that we all probably feel, but sometimes, you know, we've been, you know, watching like maybe a sort of boring, you know, Tokyo Verde game and say, oh gosh, this is really boring, you know, like, but now, I wish I could watch a Tokyo Verde game. Now, any game, you know, like, I heard the Nicaragua League is on, by the way. I don't know if DAZN has the rights or something, but I would watch the Nicaraguan League if it was on, I swear, you know, like, I was watching, you know, La Liga had this fantastic idea, and they had one player for each team to play a knockout tournament on FIFA, on the video game. That was broadcasted live. It was fun. It was better than nothing. By the way, Real Madrid won with, you know, played by Asensio. So, I mean, even, you know, they won even that one. But, okay, anyway, you know, it's just, I'm so hungry for football that, you know, I'd really take anything. And I swear I won't complain. If we have to play, you know, every 3 days for, you know, 20 months, I'll be happy. I won't complain. I swear I won't complain.
Yeah, I like the fact that you chose the Tokyo Verde there for your example as well, Cesare. So, okay, what do you think the likelihood is? So you've both kind of gone for a late summer as a possible restart. Cesare slightly more optimistic July, August, while Sam thinks September is the best case scenario. Cesare, do you think the J-League would consider starting or restarting the schedule in the case of J1 and J2 and obviously getting the season going in J3 with no supporters in the stands? Or do you think they're going to hold to their mantra that they will only start when it's safe for fans to attend the games? Because obviously with all the revenues that you've been talking about, and even though there will be less fans in the stands if they are permitted to return once the games return, the amount of fans in will be lower, which means the amount of revenue will be lower, but I guess it's better than nothing. Or do you think they would consider starting behind closed doors for a week or two or three a month, I don't know, but once until rather the health ministry deems that it's safe for people to return to social gatherings en masse?
Okay, one word to, you know, on the health ministry. I totally agree with the fact that matches had to be suspended and that people should not gather there. I just don't get what's the difference between putting, you know, 3,000 people watching Tokyo Verde in Ajinomoto and 3,000 people on each commuter train every morning, you know, in Tokyo. I don't get, you know, it has, you know, like only a few sectors of the Japanese, you know, business have been basically, you know, stopped. And it's mostly, you know, it's been sports, it's been entertainment. And, you know, I think it's been incredibly unfair. You know, even, you know, like, I think that it was the mayor who said, you know, like, don't go to karaoke, you know, like, and it's just like, it's so, you know, I totally agree with the fact that football should have been stopped. Everything should have been stopped. In fact, if everything would have been stopped, okay, let's even, you know, close our, you know, close our nose and pretend that, you know, the Olympics had nothing to do with it. If they would have stopped right after the Olympics have been, you know, called off, we already be 2 weeks into shutdown. Shutdown lasts for like a month, month and a half, 2 months, something like that, if you look at Wuhan. Okay, a disciplined shutdown, as they definitely are able to do in Japan, will last 2 months, would definitely be good to go in the summer. But anyway, that didn't happen. The shutdown is going to start now. It's going to last at least for a month, probably more. I really wish they would shut down the whole country, not only seven prefectures, by the way. But anyway, you know, when it restarts, it has, as you said, it has to restart in front of an audience, because, you know, all the tickets and all the, you know, match day related income, you know, like the goods they sell at the stores, and, you know, and I think that even all, you know, the whole J League industry is also, you know, involves, you know, the people who work at the stands outside the stadium, you know, the trains that take the people there. And overall, I have to say that, you know, football without fans is, it's sad anywhere. But I really feel that in Japan, it's, you know, I think in Japan, the fans are the best thing. The best thing about the J League are the fans. All right, they always chant the same songs, and, you know, like, they're, you know, a bit too focused, maybe only on their team. There's not much banter. But the dedication, the color, the atmosphere that the fans generate, it's fantastic. And, you know, the whole match experience in Japan, it's amazing. I mean, I always compare it to a matsuri. You know, it's a sort of, there's a celebration party, you know, like there's kids, there's elders, there's, you know, both men and women, you know, like there's beer, there's, you know, it's fun. And you, if you take that away, I think, you know, it might, to be a bit cynical here, it might even expose some of the limits of the game in Japan itself. Because let's face it, and maybe, you know, we can talk about that when we talk about eventually, you know, the idea of expanding the league to 20 teams. You know, I think that, you know, the level of the J League in the last few years hasn't been very high, but it's still a fantastic experience when you go to a match because of the fans. If you ever, you know, when you have friends visiting, if you brought them to a J League game, they always love it. Always, you know, like they always say, this is one of the best football experience I've ever had in my life. You know, like Japan is a fantastic, you know, like game experience to offer to, of course, to everyday fans, and even to casual fans. So I cannot think of, you know, besides the economic factor, I cannot think of a J League game without fans. You know, like there've been a couple of times, you know, like what it happened because of you know, punishment. You remember when, of course, with the Japanese only banner by the Robert's fans, it was terrible, really, really terrible. And, you know, I don't want to see it again.
Yeah, I agree. I don't really want to see any J League game without the fans. They are definitely one of the, if not the best thing about the league. I just worry that if the choice is between writing this season off or starting it with a few months of behind closed doors games, I think they might go down that route and try and balance out the economic, like, failures or whatever with extra overseas deals. I know, like, Belarus is one of the only leagues that is going on at the moment, and because of that, they've managed to get extra TV deals across Russia, across Europe, all over the place, yeah. More exposure than they could ever have dreamed of. So if, say, Japan is one of the first leagues to get going June, July or whatnot, they could potentially take advantage of that and get TV deals across the world, which would hopefully mitigate some of the economic problems that the clubs are going to face. But yeah, it's not an ideal situation, and no one really wants to see any J League game without the fans.
Yeah, and some I agree with what you say. And, you know, on top of that, I have to say that, you know, restarting, you know, okay, if it has to be like, let's say if we need to start a couple of weeks earlier without fans, okay, so be it, you know, like if that's really needed. But the point is, like, for me, the thing which the danger of restarting is, of course, you know, like every person's health is important. But let's say that overall we got over this, and, you know, the coronavirus, the COVID-19 is just considered as just a quote unquote normal influenza. And, you know, a dozen fans get treated and that'll be part of life. Like people get normal influenza. I'm not done playing this virus. Don't get me wrong. But I'm saying once we return to normality, it still be out as one of the diseases. You know, there'll be like special attention in it, but you know, it won't disappear overnight. So there might be, you know, a few cases. That's, you know, we'll have to live with it. Like we'll live with this virus, you know, in the next winter, you know, in the years to come. But the problem is that if a player gets it, then it becomes really, really complicated. Because if a player gets it, you know, considering the nature of the lifestyle of footballers, you can't be sure that some other people, you know, in the locker room are going to get it. So even if you want to say, you know, like, okay, let's move on, let's pretend. If you got a team that, you know, is maybe with 5 or 6 players off, that's a huge problem. So for me, you know, like it makes sense to restart when we really are, you know, as sure as possible that, you know, the worst, you know, is gone and, you know, it's behind our backs and we can really go on and play without worrying too much. So it has to be, you know, with the players, you know, for sure. So at that point, you know, like, it's just like, can bring in the fans as well, you know, because, you know, like, I mean, I want to make this clear. I'm not implying that the players as human beings are more important than the fans. But for, you know, to make sure that the J League continues, yes, they are. Because, you know, if a few fans are not there, the J League will continue. If a few players are not there, you know, it'd be much more of a problem. So for me, it's a no-brainer. You know, just let's get back with the fans in the stadium when everybody's ready for it. And hopefully, you know, the sooner the better. And, you know, what you say that, you know, we could have a head start, you know, over the other leagues. Yeah, it's a hugely wasted opportunity, especially considering how, you know, the J League did go on a, you know, on a lockdown, you know, at least in theory, I mean, game-wise, league-wise, immediately, basically. So, yeah, bit, you know, tough luck.
Well, yeah, I mean, considering the situation, though, Cesare, have you been surprised that J League clubs haven't shut down operations, knowing that they wouldn't have games to play until, you know, at least the end of April? Were you surprised that clubs were carrying on training as normal? I mean, obviously, early last week we got the Gotoku Sakai news. I don't know if Kobe immediately shut down their first team training. I didn't hear that they did, so I presume they didn't. I know Gamba Osaka sent their players home sometime last week, and just today, Monday evening, the Tokyo Prefecture has gone into a state of emergency. FC Tokyo have announced that their players will not be training for the foreseeable future. But I mean, yeah, were you surprised that things are carried on basically as normal through this league-wide shutdown, knowing that there was going to be such a long break between games?
No, I wasn't surprised. And I tell you, the reason why is, you know, I've been in Japan for 25 years now. And, you know, I have a master's degree in Japanese history. I study Asian studies. I'm very interested in cultural and sociological issues. So I think I do understand Japan quite well, at least some of the social aspects. And I'm using a generalization here, but one thing which I think is absolutely true about the Japanese is when there is clear instruction, a plan, a way to do things. Okay. That's the Japanese word is kata, right? You know, like a way to do things. They are fantastic. When it comes to executing, the Japanese are amazing. Possibly I don't want to say the best in the world, but top level. Okay. But when it comes to something new, when there's no blueprint, when they have to quote unquote improvise, quickly make decision, and especially take responsibilities, it's, you know, it's always a disaster in Japan. And, you know, like I knew exactly that nobody was ready for this. Nobody would take responsibility. Nobody will just like, you know, make a decision. Nobody would call it. And that's exactly what happened. Not only in football, I mean, just like everywhere, you know, like, none of the big companies, I mean, just like the lack of leadership in Japan regarding this specific issue was flabbergasting. You know, like we've seen just like, you know, some politician on TV showing this, you know, this cardboard with like washing hands. That's it, you know, and all this kind of, you know, half measures, you know, like, well, maybe the kids can go to school only 3 hours. You know, this, you know, like we shut down the J League, you know, it's just like, is pretty poor management, crisis management, you know, like, and, you know, like, if there's an earthquake, you know, the Japanese know exactly what to do. And just like in a matter of, boom, 2 weeks, everything is just, you know, like, basically back to normality. But when something new comes up, when there's no, you know, like manual for it, in most cases, Japanese politicians, Japanese, you know, businessmen think they're completely lost. And they were. And they are. I mean, just like, you know, the Abe masks things is just, you know, this typical example of just like, it, this will to show, listen, we're trying something. We are aware that there's a problem. This, you know, for now we do this, but, you know, like this really, there's no resolve, no, you know, no swift action. And, we'll pay the price for it. Of course, we'll pay the price for it. And, unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know. I mean, the way it is that the population here at large is not wired to stand up and speak. So there's never been a revolution in Japanese history. So the people will, you know, endure it, will just like, you know, just take the risk. I mean, I'm sure that all the people who went to work in this, especially in this last week in Tokyo, were terrorized. They said, my God, if I get it, if I bring it home, if my child gets it, if my wife gets it, you know, if my friends get it, if my colleague gets it. But, you know, until like an order comes from above, and like, they won't do anything. So I expect the situation to happen. We've seen it already with the boat, right? Whatever it was called, the princess something, the boat that was, you know, like the complete mess that they made out of that. So, yeah, short answer, no, I'm not surprised.
Well, I mean, Cesare, I don't want to, bring up a painful topic here, but I mean, you must have just been absolutely devastated to see the number of fatalities coming from your native Italy as a result of the coronavirus, and obviously with Japan having such an aging population as well. I mean, do you just wake up in a sweat every night, just the complete lack of preparedness that Japan seems to show for this, and obviously if it can happen in Italy, it can happen here as well. And the fact that, as we've said in the last few episodes, we've seemed to have led a charmed life here with the number of confirmed cases. Obviously, they have spiked since the Olympics was postponed. But I mean, you've seen that, you know, in your native country, the amount of fatalities there. So, I mean, surely you must fear something similar, especially the way, as we've just been speaking about, the way that Japan just doesn't seem prepared to handle this.
Yes. Well, you know, first of all, regarding Italy, or, you know, it could be, you know, Spain, Germany, England, the United States. Sure. It's been devastating, you know, like I just like since I moved to the countryside, I decided to have a healthier life. I stay up to watch European games at night only if it's a really big game, if I work on it. Otherwise, I sleep. And the first thing I do in the morning is I turn on my phone and check the scores, even before I go to the restroom or drink a glass of water. And now that has changed to checking, you know, how many people passed away and how many people got, you know, infected. And it's been a nightmare. And considering the head start that Japan had, and also, as I say, the social advantages that we have by the sort of like less, you know, physical contact, you know, and more the more discipline that we're in Japan, I think Japan could have just like, you know, got away with literally with shutting down like a few weeks, you know, 3 weeks, a month from the beginning. But it didn't happen. Now, as you said, you know, the number of people who got, you know, infected, the number of tests, you know, let's say this is, you know, started to spike after the Olympics were called off. So you might just, you know, it might make you think, maybe they were trying to keep it down now. And maybe, you see, here's the point, you know, like the problem with Japan, and this connects with what I said before, not the problem, sorry, the diversity of Japan is that, you know, like, In for example, in Italy, we will always put family and health before things such as, you know, work, our company, the country, you know, like, I mean, if one of our relatives is sick, who cares, you know, about your job, who cares about your company, you know, that's the thing. But I don't think that's the case in Japan. I think that Japan has already now, you know, in place since the post-war boom, structured, you know, where, you know, sacrifice for, you know, for the economy, for the country, it's normal. It's normal. Every year, there's tens of thousands of people who die of overwork, of, you know, stress-induced suicide. And what's done about it? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. In order to preserve, you know, like the economy, the business as it is, nothing is done. Nothing is done, you know, like to change the education system. Nothing is done to globalize more the country. Nothing is done to make so that, you know, fathers have more time with their children. Nothing really changes when it comes to the basic structure of Japan. So, you know, even in, I think that what happened in this case is the same. It's just like the first instinct of, you know, those who pull the strings, but also of the people is just, we go on. You know, like, okay, some people are going to die. 1,000, 5,000, 10,000, you know, tough luck. Again, you know, we just move on, and that's just the way the country braves this. But for me, the mistake is in this case is this might be too much, because this is an incredibly contagious virus. You know, like the, you know, without going too much into the specifics, we have seen, you know, in China first and then in Europe and the United States, how it really, really, you know, like it attacks, you know, the next person in a terror is really, really effective, you know, like. And so, you know, like I don't think that even, you know, it's okay. The Japanese, as I say, don't hug, don't kiss them, you know, wash their hands. And but, you know, still, for example, you know, in a big urban area are very much, you know, in constricted spaces, right? I mean, like the trains, the bars, the offices. In Tokyo, there's a lot of people in very little space. And I think at Shibuya Station, you know, like 3 million people, you know, pass by every day. So, you know, the idea that, you know, like, oh, you know, like we'll be immune or we'll brave it, you know, like we just like, you know, we get over it somehow, you know, even if I think it's surreal for me just that they thought like that, especially while at the same time that we're seeing what happened in other countries. It might boil down a little bit to the idea, oh, you know, we Japanese are different, which is like something that, you know, is very much into, you know, inculcated into the mind of the people here from their early school days. And, you know, I know quite a few very intelligent, cultivated Japanese who say, you know, like, oh, we're not getting it because, you know, because we wear masks, you know, because we wash hands, because, you know, we have less contact. But no, I've, you know, I mean, what is been growing after the Tokyo Olympics have been called, you know, postponed is not the number of people infected, it's the number of people tested. Mm. And the number of people infected is just a consequence and of that. You know, and yeah, I mean, we don't know, of course, what happened, you know, like, and, you know, these things are bigger than us. And, you know, I don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, you know, I personally do think that for these things, Japan is wrong. That's my opinion as an Italian, as a Westerner, you know, as somebody who grew up, you know, with a mix of Greco-Roman and Catholic, you know, education. So that's my opinion. But it might not be wrong, you know, like my country and business might be more important than family and health, whatever, it's just the difference. But I'm just describing things as I think I've seen them. And, you know, as much as for many reasons, Japan is a good country to be when something like this happened, it's also a terrible country to be when something like this happened, because, you know, I think that the individual life and, you know, the importance of the family and health in general is less, you know, is less than I personally think it should be. And this is, you know, I went throughout all the fields of society, including, of course, for us, you know, especially for us, football, you know, and sports, because, you know, like it's been one that has been, you know, directly hit because people did get sick. And also, you know, as a business as well, it's been hit. We got just the, yeah, people who work in sports and maybe with music and entertainment, we had the worst of both worlds, right? We just did get, you know, like, we were at risk of being infected. Some of us have been infected. And on top of that, we were just prevented from working, you know, like, so, yeah, it's been a rough few months, you know, and, you know, we just can't wait for this to be over as soon as possible, I guess.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, as we move back onto to J League matters before we round up. You've obviously both given your thoughts on a potential or a possible restart, and obviously this season perhaps bleeding into the year 2021. And but by the time the 2021 J1 season starts, of course, it will feature 20 teams, as none of the 18 top flight teams will be relegated after the 2020 season, whenever it indeed finishes. And Sam, I know you had a question you wanted to ask Cesare about the 20 team J1 that obviously Scott McIntyre had very strong opinions on in last week's episode.
Yeah, and we don't know at the moment whether this would be permanent. It's obviously a temporary measure at the moment. But I think it was maybe 04, 05 in Italy. They transitioned from an 18-team to a 20-team Serie A. So I was just wondering, how did that transition kind of work? And has it kind of been a benefit for Italian football, or maybe more of a negative?
It's been terrible, you know, like, and it has been terrible, but it's been absorbed by the fact that back then, before the cultural scandal of 2006, you know, it was still like a top league with a lot of good players. And, what happened when enlarge the league, in very practical terms, you add, some mediocre clubs. You add just low-ranked clubs. That's what you're doing. And with that come, low-ranked players and, less entertaining games, I think. And I think that to do that, is this already decided for Japan, even if the whole season goes through? Because I hope not, because for me, for Japan, it would be unbelievable. I don't remember exactly what Scott said, but, I don't think you can curse on this podcast, so I wouldn't say what I really think, but let's say it'll be stupid. It'll be really, really stupid. I think, as I said before, that the level of football in Japan, in the J-League, it really went down in the last few years. You see it with the national team as well. You see it with, Kagegumi, with the players in Europe, The Japanese national team has, had a few good games, and overall, since 2010, has been honestly downhill. In 2010, Japan had a kick-ass team. It was a very, very good team. It was like a second-tier world-level team. It was a team that it was a great team. And then it went down and down and down and down. And now it's just like, I don't know, I don't want to say a mediocre team, but it's a very average team. And, no European player is shining. No Japanese player is shining in Europe in the season, And it's been like that for 2-3 seasons. Honda didn't end well. Kagawa didn't end well. Nagatomo is now a little too old, and none of the young. Of course, we have hopes for Takefusa Kubo, but several of the others basically either flopped or had really average seasons. So this is a matter of fact. It's not a very good period. So this is the period where you should reduce the number of teams, because guys, have you ever watched in recent years a game of the Brazilian league? It's dreadful. The level is horrible. Why? Because they don't have the money to bring in good players, and all the good players leave, which is exactly what's happening in Japan now. Japan it has become a feeding league with no money to bring in good players. I mean, let's face it. This opened another huge can of worms with, the agents bringing in the crappy Brazilians. We don't want to go there. But overall, I think, honestly, in recent years, the only really good player that came into Japan, I mean, like really, really good, was Iniesta. I don't think Podolski and Torres and Del Villa, I don't think they were better than a good J-leaguer. Yeah, bigger names, they surely brought something to the club. But, so the level, of the game is not really high. You dilute it by bringing in more clubs. I think the J1 should have, 12 clubs at the moment. 12 clubs with all the best players, all, financially sound clubs with, enough money, enough sponsors to bring in some really good players. Not necessarily, like the big names, but just like the player who would be, useful, like, good goalkeepers, good center backs, good strikers, those players that Japan seem incapable to produce. And then it would be, it would be much better, much more understanding. It would be much more market. We also have to start thinking global, right? How do, what do we sell, not only Southeast Asia, but to the world? Which games are we showing? Okay, we're showing, as we said before, a wonderful stadium atmosphere, entertaining games. But, if you look at the level of the game, I don't think it's very high now. To bring in more teams, it's just like, you know. And then, you know, really, you know, like 38 games is too many. It's really too many. I mean, now, okay, I'll take them now, okay? If you want to, just if you want to see 38 games now, yes, I do. But overall, you know, like, given in a normal situation, 38 games is too many. It never ends, you know, like, I mean, at, for me, like, the perfect number was when I was a kid in Italy, there were 16 teams. 30 games. Perfect. Okay, you want to bring it to 18? 34 games? Okay, more than that, it really just like, you know, it's, you know, you even, you know, there's so many meaningless games by the end of the season that all this is, you know, you don't even have a Europa League in Asia, in Japan. So you basically, it's like everything which is, you know, like not fighting for the ACL, assuming that the club want to go to the ACL, because we know that some Japanese clubs don't really fancy that. But, you know, anybody between that and the relegation zone, you know, you might have, you know, now like six or seven clubs who are basically, you know, by September, you know, they're just done. They're not going to go to Asia, and they're not going to be relegated. You're going to have two more. It's just, I don't know, it doesn't make sense. And there's going to be, like, you know, a bunch of more, you know, like, Nakamura players called Nakamura and Yamaguchi that nobody's ever heard about, and who just, like, you know, won't add anything to the game. And, you know, I'm totally against it. I think I made my point, you know, like, I just, no, it's a big no. If something, if you want to change it, less teams, really, less teams. Maybe, you know, you could divide the J2 into two groups and have just like, you know, more like East and West, so that, you know, it's easier for the fans to travel around. It costs less to the clubs. But, you know, like, no, I'm against it. No.
Yeah, it has been a long time since your last appearance, Cesare, but I do remember you banging the drum previously about, wanting to reduce the number of top flight teams. And I mean, yeah, this is a DAZN idea, of course, according to Scott. It's not something that he was pimping for as well. But sorry, did I cut you off again there, Sam? Sorry.
Don't worry. I just think I agree completely that it would dilute the quality of the league. I think, I don't know necessarily about the competitiveness. I remember 2 years ago when I think there were five teams that finished level on points in that relegation playoff. I think two games to go in that season, every team bar maybe one had a chance of going either into the Asia places or into the relegation battle. So I don't know about necessarily competitiveness. I think there is a general lack of quality, but it's kind of all filtered towards the bottom. So you have kind of exciting relegation battles. But the only positive I could maybe bring from having 20 teams in is if you then cut the J2 to 20 teams, that kind of eases the fixture burden on those teams. And you can also then fill up with the J3 teams. You get rid of these under-23s and you bring more teams up from the JFL.
Yeah. Actually, you know, this just, I do have a question for you. Okay. I mean, you just brought up this, you know, competitiveness point. Very good point. And, you know, you're right, because it's very, you know, like the J League is a very, how do you say, averaged league. I mean, like, there's no real, you know, outstanding team. Any team in any given game can beat the other team way more than in European leagues, for example. So, here's my question. Would you like to see some or more like big clubs? You know, would you like to see some, you know, like Bayern Munich, some Real Madrid, some powerhouses in the league or not?
It's a very interesting question.
Yeah.
I don't know. I followed the Japanese league only for like 6 years or so, but I quite like the fact that there isn't a set number of four teams or whatever that always win the league or always the ones at the top. I like the kind of unique kind of randomness that the J League brings, and it kind of is a bit of an escape for me from the Premier League, where bar Leicester, you know who's going to win the league or be in the top three or four every season. So I quite like the uniqueness of it. Whether it helps Japanese football in terms of getting to a more global stage, I don't know. I think you do need those sorts of teams as representatives. Like if you speak of Italy, you know, Juventus, you know, Inter Milan, AC Milan, and England the same with Man United, Liverpool, whoever. So I think on a more marketable scale, you need those bigger teams. But just for me, as just one guy watching a league and getting the enjoyment out of it, I like the competitive nature of it and the kind of who knows what's going to happen kind of aspect of the league.
Right. No, I mean, you're perfectly right. I mean, I agree with you 120%. I mean, it's just like, as a, you know, as a sort of like a bit of an external fan or even like a dedicated fan, as in the end we are, it's good to have this diversity. This, you know, it's a bit like almost like watching, you know, like American sports when you really have no idea. You know, like some franchises are better than others, but you don't know who's going to win in a given season. So it's great. But if you think of, you know, I wouldn't say not only, you know, my concern is, to be honest, okay, and this maybe my analysis is a bit different from yours. It's not only on a global scale, which is important, but even for football in Japan, I think that to have some, you know, like some club like the Yomiuri Giants or the Hanshin Tigers, some club, you know, like where, okay, this is a very good point, for example. Sorry, I take a detour, but imagine if there were, you know, 40 baseball teams. I don't think the baseball would be that popular in Japan. I know, understand football and baseball are different, like games every day, you know, the culture, the history and everything. But for me, you know, like if you will have, you know, maybe, you know, ideally not one or two, but four or five big clubs with the, you know, like it's, let's say each one of them has three national team players and at least one kick-ass foreign player. Then, you know, like those games would always be interesting. People will watch them, you know, like to begin with in Japan, you know, like you would say, oh, you know, like let's imagine, you know, like that if there was, you know, like a team that has, I don't know, Okazaki and Nagatomo and, I don't know, say one European good player, I don't know, let's say Cavani, okay, for the, you know, like since, you know, his name was out lately. And, you know, I'd be way more, you know, like interested in watching them than, you know, like me and everybody. Then, you know, like I'm sorry, than an average, you know, J1 team. That, you know, I think that to create, you know, sort of like a big club, and you know, a few big clubs. That should be like really one goal. However, I have to say that is in total, you know, contradiction with not only with the J League but with Japan culture, you know, idea. I know, you know, nobody's supposed to stick out too much. Nobody's, you know, it's generally, you know, like a decent, a good average is better than, you know, like having some peaks and some valleys, I think. So, you know, like it's one of the biggest, you know, cultural contradictions that for me makes so that Japanese football will always be good, of course, but never, you know, world class, you know, and this is just like my, you know, like it's one of the points that I always bring up. I mean, just to wrap it up, the reason why Japanese football will never be, you know, like at the level of European football is because of the lack of overall willing to win. I don't think that, you know, the Japanese players overall, the Japanese players, the Japanese fans, the Japanese clubs have that will. Nowhere near the will to win that, you know, teams in Europe and in South America have. This is never a matter of life and death. It's a matter of doing your best, of fighting well, but, you know, there's never this idea of, you know, killing your opponents, killing sports-wise, right? There's no this idea of just like, you know, football is made of rivalry. It's made of, you know, it's a very aggressive, you know, culture is a very aggressive sport. You know, what the fans say is, in the stadium, what defense say to the best friend if support another club, you know, it's so much part of the football culture. But this is in total contradiction with the ideals of post-war Japan, which is this wah, right? This harmony. And, you know, this is the reason why we can go and enjoy, you know, Japanese games. There's never going to be hooligans or riots or just like, you know, we can take our, you know, if you have a 3-year-old daughter, we can take her to the stadium. If you have a 90-year-old grandmother, we can take her to the stadium. It's going to be okay, which is wonderful. But when is, and that is just like what is, you know, I think it relates to what we said before. When it comes to, you know, enjoying the football, you know, the you know, like it's a bit of a relief, you know, from the European football we use for. But when it comes to the football itself and to compete to win the heart of fans in Japan and the world, I think it's, you know, if society says that it is, it's impossible. And the epitome of that was that game against Belgium where Japan was winning 2-0 with, it was like in the 55th minute, I think, and managed to let in 3 goals. How? That's impossible. But they did it. You know, it was that game it could have changed the history of Japanese football, but it didn't. It was just another version of Doha. You know, like it's just, oh, it's there. Okay, I can, boom, boom. And they dropped it, you know. It was just so easy to take the game home. The Belgian player were all over the place. He just needed to waste time, you know, like to just get in their face, to tell them, hey, guys, you know, like you might be playing the Premier League, but you're crap. We're beating. Just get them nervous, just anything, you know, like anything that, you know, like any European or, you know, South American, you know, like some militia, okay, some, you know, bring it home. And then let's go play Brazil in the next round. No. Of course, you know, Japan had to win in a supportive way, in a beautiful way. And they lost. So I think I made my point.
Indeed. And we go full circle. Yeah, I mentioned the, your last appearance was after that particular game, Cesare. And we finished with a mention of, Japan's loss in the 2018 World Cup. So just before we go, allow me to be a little bit self-indulgent here and thank you for your support on Patreon, Cesare. You and David are our two latest supporters on that platform, and it's absolutely fantastic to have you on board as a supporter of the podcast. I very much appreciate it.
Yeah, I just, you know, like, okay, first, like, a message to anybody who's listening to this podcast, you must become a Patreon. If you don't, you're a bad person. I mean, it's true. Honestly. I mean, you know, like, it's just, if you are a regular listener, how many podcasts do you guys make per month? Like 10?
Roundabout.
Something like that, yeah? 10. That's 50 cents for podcast. If you're not willing to, you know, give to the people who are just bringing you the service 50 cents, you're a bad person. Honestly, you know, like, I mean, just this, you know, I love Patreons. I just like, you know, I just, besides this, I also support like a podcast on Spanish football and one great guy who's making a fantastic podcast on the history of rock and roll. And, you know, I'm so proud to be part of this. It's great to have the chance to directly support the creativity of others who just give you a service. You know, like every time I listen to this podcast, for me, it's a happy 30, 60 minutes. You know, like sometimes it happens when I'm building a fence. Sometimes it happens when I'm washing the dishes. Sometimes when I'm driving. I'm so grateful that this podcast exists. And, you know, like if all I have to do to support it is to pay $5 per month. Come on, guys. I mean, what are we talking about? Just go to patreon.com and sign up. Really. Don't piss me off, okay? Do it.
That's very, very nice of you to say, mate. And I have to, reiterate that I have not reimbursed Cesare for those comments in any way. But very nice of you to say, Cesare. I usually, leave it up for the subscribers to make it known by themselves or not, whether they do subscribe. We have over 30 at the moment, and I very much appreciate them all. Some of them are contributors to this podcast. Some of them are hosts of different podcasts on this platform. So, I usually leave it up to them to decide if they want to disclose whether they're a patron or not.
And tell your friends. Really, tell your friends, you know, about this podcast and about Patreon. You know, it's just a It's great to have the chance to support somebody who is willing to put their knowledge, their time, and also their consistency, because you've been doing this for like how many episodes? 180, something like that.
Well, 300 now, right?
All right. Well, sorry. Okay, my bad. You need to be rewarded for this. You know, the service you've done need to be. I mean, people pay to, you know, like 2,000 yen per month to watch Captain Tsubasa on the Zone. Can they pay $5 for this? Come on. Yes, really. I mean, how can you look at yourself in the mirror if you haven't paid the $5? Come on. Go. Do it now.
Very nice of you, Cesare. Thank you very much. And, that just tops off the whole episode. Absolutely brilliant to catch up with you again. And let's make sure it's not the 21 months before we do it again. I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
And we should do one podcast from Hokkaido. You should come over, play with the husky, eat some of my, you know, Italian food cooked with Hokkaido ingredients, and then we can have like another nice chat anytime.
Well, that sounds absolutely tremendous. And when Sam's got his DIY skills properly up to scratch, maybe he can pop over and join us as well. Sam,
absolutely.
Sam, great to speak with you again, and look forward to doing so again next week.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Thank you to everyone for donating on Patreon. Thank you for to Cesare for his aggressive sell and for his company today. Yeah, it's been great. Thank you.
Yes, I'm hang on in there, okay? All the best to you and everybody in Europe. I'm not a super fan of the royal family, but I saw the message from the Queen, from Lilibet, and I thought, you know, I really wish in Japan we had somebody like her who could speak to the people as she did. But, you know, like, yeah, be strong. And, yeah, I'll see you in coronavirus-free Japan ASAP.
Thank you very much. I look forward to building fences with you.
All right, then. That is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. My thanks again to Cesare Palinghi and Sam Robson, and, of course, to you for listening wherever you are. We'll speak to you again next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk podcast. Yes, 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 yes.